CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, everybody. Yes, we're here and we're live, and Pumi managed to get power, which is, I mean, like, what a thrill, because these days, if you even have power, that's fantastic. She's managed somehow to hotspot off her phone, which is what we had to do the other day. You see, we, a Boer or a Zulu makes a plan. Hey, Pums?
Always.
We make a plan.
It's a South African truism.
Yeah, we make a plan. That's what we do. And my God, they're testing us, eh? Yes, that's... Did you see... Oh, my God, this is so funny. Did you see that clip of Lindiwe Zulu? She was on SABC News.
Oh, no.
And her power went out.
No.
And that's exactly what she does. She just goes... It goes dark, and you just see the reflection in her sunglasses, and she goes, oh, no. And that's the end of the interview. Let me see if I can play it for you. I don't know if this has audio. Sia's going to see if he can't find a clip on Twitter, but watch this just to get the visuals. If you're listening to us on the podcast, please just hop onto YouTube and just take a look, or on Twitter or wherever you find it, because honestly, I don't know where else to find it. But she just basically goes, oh no, in the middle of the interview, and then it switches off and you just see her glasses in the screen. It's hilarious. So it's like this, and then she's talking, and then one, two, boom, goes dead, and she goes, oh no. And they cross back to the studio.
Oh, that look on Vuyomvoko.
Oh God, and it's
that
such
look on Vuyomvoko's face, though.
Like if there was ever a single situation that could describe the ANC, it's that. It's like they don't even know how they've got into this situation. They just know it's bad. It's hilarious. Anyway, yeah. So we're all coping with load shedding. Yesterday, I went to the dentist. Which was, it's always a horrible and unpleasant. Yeah, I know. It's always an unpleasant experience. But she's such
Why?
A sweet woman. Because
really?
I hate going to the dentist. It's been a thing since I was a kid. It was scary. It was painful. It was horrible. It was a scary place. And she's the loveliest woman, this woman I go to. And she's so sweet. Like, children come to her from all over the place because she's so good with them. So I'm obviously a children. Because I have to go to her as well. Anyway, she, as I arrived, she was busy pouring, I kid you not, pouring petrol into a generator outside her practice so that she could operate the drill and the suction and all that stuff just in case she needed it. And, I mean, I just went for a cleaning, so it wasn't a big thing. But she said if she doesn't have the generator, even though they've got batteries there as well, the batteries are not strong enough to power the suction of the drill, or one of the two. So I was like, oh my God, you got to be kidding. There's my dentist with a big plastic bottle filling up a generator right outside her own dental practice. I'm like, you know, South Africans, really, we are the most resilient people in the world. It's not something which we should have to be, because this is such a backward problem for a country like ours to be dealing with, especially when we are generating, I think it's a quarter of the electricity we used to. Like, Eskom's demand has gone right down, right? The supply has gone right down. Their demand has gone right down. They're a monopoly and they still can't run. But it's an amazing situation. It's an amazing situation to find ourselves in. We used to supply power to every other country in Africa. Well, at least in sub-Saharan
Africa.
Well,
we still do.
We still do.
We still supply Zimbabwe, Botswana.
Jesus.
And so I'm always asking myself, with our power problems, do they have the same thing? Like,
well,
are they having load shedding the way we are having load shedding because we supply them with power?
They used
Pardon
to.
My ignorance. Can you break that down, please? How do we supply other countries?
So we used to
generate all of their power.
We used to supply in excess. We used to have so much power that basically it was cheaper than it ever should have been right from the start, because we produced so much, and we had lots of coal, and we had enough power stations, and then those weren't maintained and they weren't looked after, and then the ANC decided to build some more power stations, but they ran hopelessly over budget. And in the meantime, the whole place was hollowed out. All the good engineers were fired and CADA deployment started taking place. I mean, this is a well-established story, and it's really something that we're going to get into today. I'm really excited about the burning platform today, because, I mean, the best person to talk to today is Ted Blom, who we know is an energy specialist, right? He's the guy who has told us about Eskom almost every step of the way. So you don't have to ask me. We can talk about this with him later. He's the real smart ass when it comes to this stuff. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. He's been watching this for years.
So these other countries, like Zimbabwe, for example, they don't have their own power plants. They don't generate their own electricity at all. They're fully supplied by us.
I don't know the answer, but I know that we supply them.
Oh, okay.
I don't actually. Well, this is the kind of thing we've got to ask.
I don't know if they're fully supplied by us, but let's ask. You will stay on here. Let's ask Ted.
We will. We'll speak to him later because he claims Eskom. Listen to this.
Writing my notes.
I mean, Ted says that he's been watching Eskom closely. He says they've been consistently underreporting for almost a year. He tweeted earlier that this week that there was a shortfall of 5,136 megawatts and that Eskom is actually implementing stage 6 load shedding to handle the shortfall, but they're lying to us. Stage 6 means they're cutting 6,000 megawatts from the power grid when it becomes unstable. Stage 2 doubles the frequency of stage 1. Stage 3 doubles the frequency of stage 2, and so on. So, I mean, this is the stuff. This is what we're stuck with. And for many people, it's gone beyond a joke, you know. I don't think that we're the worst off in the world, but we're certainly right up there. And this is what happens when you have an incompetent government. People always say, in fact, the president said just the other day, Cyril Ramaphosa himself, he said, people think that corruption is a victimless crime. Well, Mr. President, it certainly is not. And that anyone sitting in the dark this morning or last night or at some point today, because it's going to happen again, I think it's scheduled for 8 o'clock in the morning for where I am. So we'll just finish the show and then it'll be off. Anybody who has to.
Your schedule's even accurate, because been asking everyone now just to make sure my schedules aren't accurate anymore. Mm. Yesterday I felt so dismayed and defeated, like a pie thrown on my face moment.
Yes.
Because I was on it. I was like, yeah, usually my electricity cuts at 8 and it's back promptly at 10. And so I was making some dinner at about 6. I had my phone next to me because I was talking to a friend and had a glass of wine. So I just felt like, I was on top of the day.
Right.
And very randomly, at like 18 minutes past 6, everything just cuts. My phone died.
Oh,
and
my God.
I gobbled the last bit of wine and I thought, I'm going to nap now. I went to bed. I cuddled my pillow and I napped.
Well, you know, that's one of the things you can do when the power goes off. And I'm always grateful for a time to sleep, but it doesn't make sense to sleep at 6 in the evening, for example, because you're going to wake up when it comes back on and then you're going to go back to sleep again. I also mentioned yesterday, this is where a lot of fires start because people are leaving heaters on and they don't remember whether they've switched them on or off, and then the power goes off and then it comes on at some random time and then there's something on top of the heater and that catches fire. Not to mention the fact that at my parents' house, apparently even when load shedding ended yesterday, the power didn't come back on because it had blown up something in the transformer. So this is what happens when your power's up and down the whole time, the actual grid gets damaged. Not to mention, you know, equipment at home. Like if your laptop is plugged in and power goes on and off the whole time, then it actually, well, not a laptop, a desktop, because that relies on power from, you know, the power cable, that actually damages the equipment. So the millions and millions of rands that every household is in danger of losing because of this makes it even worse. Anyway, I mean, we all know what's going on, right? So there's no point in talking about it. The government are completely powerless to help us. They are absolutely incompetent, useless. And powerless, yes, it's a pun, but it's for many people, it's not funny. They're losing their sense of humor. I don't want us to ever lose our sense of humor on the show, but people are. I just want to go to a couple of points here on the comments this morning. First of all, welcome to Ryan, who's actually up early enough to watch this live today. Hey, Ryan, nice to have you with us. Lots of other people who've woken up. Hugo's here. Corona's boring is one of our regulars. And then Anushka says, and this is very important, my YouTube popped up with a notification on my phone that the show is live. Is that because I liked and subscribed? Yes, it is. Loving it. Mm-hmm. So, Sia, will you do the like and subscribe, please, for this morning? Here he is, Sia Sangweni, everybody. And he's here to remind us of what we have to do. Go, take it away, Sia.
Hi, guys. Welcome back to the Cliff Central YouTube channel. To make sure that you don't miss out on any of the action, click like and subscribe to get notifications right on your device.
Perfect.
Don't have a trademark yet.
I know. You have to have a hand signal of some kind. You know, you have to be able to do something that people expect.
Or end up doing the Macarena one of these days.
Bees Rockstar Gaming says this load shedding is not cool. Ruth says we currently have load shedding, so we won't be staying. So I won't be staying too long. Ah, Monica says I don't use heaters. I use 5 cats on top of layers of blankets, and they could decide to eat me in the night, and that's still safer. Yeah. Stage ten is when Eskom takes away your partner because he or she is the light of your life.
Can we just talk?
Yeah, you light up my life. You give me hope to carry on. That one. It's a good song.
It's a bit romantic.
I love that. Super Jacob Zuma says, what a name. Super Jacob Zuma says, Mkize is going from I did not benefit from digital vibes to I have consulted my family and we will pay everything back within 14 days is beautifully South African.
Yes, sis. I was just like, hey, my daughter, this guy, what the hell? Oh, we'll pay back the money.
And apparently he's gone.
Under the tree justice here.
Yeah, but he's also apparently gone off to KZN to be with his family and to hide away from the media. I mean, this is... this is like when you catch a child with his hand in the cookie jar. But at the same time, I do want to say, at very least, and I know it's slim pickings when you come to honor in the ANC, at very least, even if it took a little while, he's admitted it and he's promised to pay back the money. This is something we never get from politicians. So if he sticks to his word, this is praiseworthy. And I mean, I know that in the land of the blind, the one-eyed is king. I would like it if this actually happens. And if it does happen, it would be a better example than all of those hide of the rhino people who go, huh, me? I didn't steal. Are you mad? I would never take money.
Do you still think there's a good ANC and a bad ANC?
No. Pums, you've disabused me of that notion. I'm doing the burning platform with you over a couple of months has convinced me there is no such thing. The ANC is so corrupted and rotten from within that there is no life left in the corpse. It's done. Done for. And the only people who keep that hope alive, that hope, that dream of the ANC being alive, the only people who do that are the maggots that are feasting on the corpse. That's all.
Anyway. But what are they even feasting on when their salaries aren't even paid on time? And
well, here's a very sad...
They're going to be picketing next week. They're going to be picketing next week, Tuesday.
To be a There's fly a statement on the wall. By Bulemabe.
I saw that. Now, what do you? Well, I mean, we don't want to waste all the politics before the burning platform, do we? Let's hold on to that until 7. Actually, there's more stuff to talk about. First of all, yesterday we had the story of the woman with the 10 babies, and the decuplets. Now, I am led to believe by a source who is far more
led to believe.
This is a friend of mine who actually is in charge of a massive publishing business and who is one of the people who I think is always honest and honorable. He would never publish anything on his Facebook because he's a publisher that he wouldn't publish in print. Okay. And I mean books. And he put up this morning, do not believe this bullshit story about the 10 children. It is Iqbal Serve and the people at IOL desperately trying to create a stir and sell some copy and get some clicks. And you know what? I can believe that Iqbal Serve and those assholes at IOL who really are the least credible. Oh. Talk about fake news. Apparently, remember Dr. Robin yesterday? Dr. Robin, who's an obstetrician and a gynecologist who listens to the show. She's one of our she's one of our diehard friends and fans, and we just love Robin to pieces, just like all of the people who listen to us. But Robin says there's no way this is true. No way. So if it's if Dr. Robin says it, and this friend of mine whose social media I saw this morning when I woke up, if they both say it's bullshit, it's probably bullshit. Right. What have you heard? What's the latest you've heard?
Well, you know, yesterday afternoon, the Department of Health took out a statement saying they've now done walked the gamut and searched, and they have found no record of these babies being born. And then at 3 p.m., about an hour or so after the statement from the Department of Health, there was a statement from the family saying these babies have been born. It's a true story. It's real. And they will release pictures of the babies when they're good and ready, because according to custom, you know, so Gareth, I don't know if white people do this, but really according to custom, babies are not seen by anybody outside of the family, at least for the first month. You know, they kept safe away from all of you. Squakwalalamu.
Well,
yeah, you must keep them away from, like, because people, old people have stuff, you know. You have stuff. You have bad vibes. Not digital vibes, not just digital. Bad vibes.
Yes.
Well, that, I don't know.
You keep them away. You keep maybe, the babies safe and hidden with the gogos and the mama.
Maybe that's true. I'm not sure. Maybe that's true. But the thing for me, I don't know if I can believe any of that, because also, you know, there's these traditions and these cultural observations which are very conveniently pulled out of the woodwork when someone's trying to prove or disprove something. But otherwise, they're hardly known to many of us. I mean, you know, there's stuff that suddenly it becomes, because of course you can't argue with culture, right? So that's where, because it's sacred, it's something sacred you can't touch. You can't go, ah, bullshit, that's not our culture. Because if you do, then all the traditionalists will say, ah, but it is, what do you know? You sell out, you know, urbanized, modern, you've turned your back on your people kind of black person. You know what I mean?
But Gareth, culture aside, there should still be a medical record.
Of course. Okay. I mean, this has got nothing to do with culture. You're not allowed to hide a child if it needs it. You can't not get a birth certificate for a child in South Africa. It's illegal. So forget your culture.
Okay.
So
let's go with it for 2 seconds that the story is fake.
Mm-hmm.
What would the intention be?
The intention would be clicks and us talking about it now.
The ultimate clickbait.
If anything, they've gone international. And let me tell you, the other thing is that these guys, they may be terrible people. They may be completely not credible, but they seem to know how to make us pay attention. They know how to get us talking. This story was trending.
It's been more than 24 hours.
This story's been trending for like 48, maybe even longer hours. And that's clever of them. I mean, if that's all they're after, remember, these websites rely on traffic. Now, if they got a huge injection of traffic, don't you for a minute think that they aren't going to go and take this to lazy ad agencies all over the country and say, look at how our numbers have gone up in the month of, we are the most trusted and credible news service, blah, blah, blah. Then they get the advertising revenue. Trust me, that happens.
But
I know.
But the stakes are so high. If perhaps they were reporting on a woman is pregnant with 10 children in South Africa and they were building up over the pregnancy, and then towards delivery they say, oh, unfortunately she lost the children, you know, then that would be a different outcome.
Because
they said the children are born, they said they're healthy.
Yeah.
We're now waiting to see.
So what do you mean by
bits of fake story?
What
they
do you
have a lot to lose?
What? Like, what do you have? What's the penalty for fake news these days? Don't people just forget after?
I want credibility.
There's no credibility. There's no credibility there anyway. See, there's no credibility there anyway. And what is the penalty for fake news? Nothing. Nobody gets punished with fake news. We all move on. We go, oh, okay, that was fake. And the next story comes up and we click on that. Because we're so easily distracted. We're like children. We don't pay attention long enough to know whether something's true or not.
I don't know then. I do not know.
I don't think there's a price. It's
bizarre to me if it would be fake.
There's no price for fake news. IOL have been consistently printing propaganda and bullshit for upwards of 5 years now. And everybody knows it. People talk about it in, you know, in coffee shops and restaurants. They're like, oh, that IOL, what a ridiculous. But they're still in business.
You know what, for me, has been so amazing to watch over the lifespan of the story, which has been longer than the usual 15 minutes, right?
Yep.
Is how politics have poisoned everything in this country.
Yeah.
So
just, now we're talking.
Just watching the way that people are responding to it online, the people that are defending IOL and mm-hmm. Iqbal and Piet Rampedi, mm-hmm. the people that are, and it's mind-blowing for me that the device of politics that are currently like running and ruining the country have seeped so deep into the fabric of our community that nothing is not about politics. Mm. I mean, just watching the Tuma Mina Minions, Tuma Mina Media Group, mm-hmm. the, all of that. And I'm just like, this has nothing to do with politics. This is a crazy story. Let's just start with the craziness of everything that, but people are like taking sides. And I was just like, We've got a big egg to unscramble here.
Well, look at this. This is reported today. Sean, I can't tell whether Sean's being sarcastic or not, but this reported today, a South African couple who set the new world record by giving birth to 10 babies this week has received a 1 million rand donation from philanthropist Dr. Iqbal Sir. Now, I can't tell whether he's being facetious or not, but I mean that, you know, again, so we'd see that, we'd go, oh, it's clearly bullshit, and we just move on. There's no price for printing nonsense. You know, this is why I have to say again, because we're coming to the end of our season on ENCA, and the only really controversial thing that got us a BCCSA complaint was getting David Icke, the conspiracy theorist, on. And we had him on, and we talked to him about conspiracy theories, which, you know, that, why not get the world's best conspiracy theorist on to talk about that? He's undeniably the most well-known conspiracy theorist in the world. So well done to Sia for getting him on the show. Anyway, we were taken to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission by a group called Media Monitoring or something like that. It's William Byrd and his people for disinformation or misinformation, because they couldn't even decide which one it was. This thing went to appeal, where both sides, and I've got to give ENCA credit for this, they actually fought. I think we had, oh my God, we had some incredible counsel representing us, and they also had pretty good ones on their side. The amount of money wasted on having an argument about disinformation and misinformation when you're talking to a conspiracy theorist blew my mind. And clearly, whoever is giving money to Media Monitoring, you know, the people who brought the complaint, William Byrd and Company, whoever's giving them money has deep pockets, because this is such a non-issue to go all the way on. I mean, we didn't go to court. It's just the BCCSA. So frankly, who cares? I mean, I'm not going to apologize anyway. Show comes to an end in about, you know, 3 weeks. So they can get fucked as far as I'm concerned. And they've wasted all this money. But you talk about media misinformation or disinformation. Let me tell you something. Iqbal Sir has got a factory printing bullshit. And no one's taking him to the Broadcasting Complaints Commission or the South African Editors Forum or what, National Editors Forum or whatever else it is. He's just carrying on. Business is good. Making money. It's unbelievable. It's really, really incredible. So a niece of the baby shower mama apparently called into ENCA and spoke to Sally Burdett on the news. And she tried to spin the story along cultural lines, which is what Pumi was talking about earlier. But we don't know who this niece is. It could also be bullshit, right? That's what Angus says this morning. Thanks, Angus. If that story is real, I'll eat my own head, says Winsterian Pikachu. Fake news in a Trump voice.
Wow. Well,
yeah, they are even...
Okay, so I have some further clarification from Dr. Robin here.
Mm.
So she writes...
Yeah.
So firstly, no one will have 10 babies. Sans ovarian stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
Then they are extremely unlikely to get as far as 29 weeks, and they will be in a neonatal ICU for weeks after that. There are such serious complications involved in this delivery, the medical world would know about it, and the delivery would have been recorded for prosperity and science. So these guys just want some cash. That is Dr.
Like, okay, so there is the story from about 6 or 8 weeks ago in Morocco.
Yes.
Y'all remember that? The Malian woman, right? Yeah. So they just upped it by one, mm-hmm. because that woman had 9 babies. And that was all. I mean, she had to be airlifted from Mali to Morocco so that the procedure could be done, all of that. You know what I'm saying? But...
You know what?
Steal.
That makes it sound even more suspicious because they saw the reaction that the Mali woman got and they thought, wow, if we have that story here in South Africa, people will be thrilled to read it. And clearly it was. It just seems so artificial, the whole thing.
My conclusion of the story, though, which has nothing to do with whether it's fake or not, is can we not call them the Tembisa 10 because that sort of sounds a little too... Court Casey. Mm. It sounds a little too apartheid something,
right?
That is still being unresolved. I don't know. It just doesn't sit well with me. Like the Tembisa 10,
yeah.
All out and loud.
You know, there's so many things. There's so many layers to the story. I also saw Zwandile Masina tweeted Pumla Williams to say, no. We found the family. The babies the comrades on the ground are assisting that family.
The comrades?
Oh, God. There was so... I mean, there's just so much happening in the story. There's so much happening in the story, guys.
Well, let's turn our attention to a few other headlines. And I just think from now on, as just a statement of responsibility, every time we mention a story, it comes from IOL. We're just going to caveat it by saying this is from IOL, so you know, all right? It's not to say that everybody else is always credible, but I think it's important to acknowledge the sources if we think it's dodgy. Eskom has warned of more blackouts. This is stage 3 power cuts set for today. Apparently, there's no end in sight to the nation's overall power crisis. Utility Eskom is warning supply will be constrained for the foreseeable future. You know how deep the shit is when they say for the foreseeable future. On Wednesday, they upped the rolling blackouts to stage 4, citing further breakdowns and a need to preserve emergency generation capacity. South Africans vented to Eyewitness News about their frustrations amid the prospect of colder, dark nights to come. If ever they're sorry, they could have come up with another plan, said a frustrated resident in Johannesburg. We understand that load shedding needs to happen. We have made peace with that, but I think we're being taken for a ride, another one said. Huh. The fact that we've made peace with load shedding just proves how low our standards are. Anyway, from Thursday at 10 p.m., we will go back to stage 2 until Sunday night at 10 p.m. That's according to Skonati Manchasha, who is the spokesperson for Eskom. What a horrible job that is. Can you imagine? There's no amount of money you could pay me to do that. People just hate you straight away.
But apparently the money is good enough.
Yeah.
After years of reporting against Eskom and all the malfeasance happening over there, the man jumped ship to go and their spokesperson.
That's right. It's like you see so many people who used to be in journalism going to work for government because the money's better. Anyway, Education Labor Relations Council has reinstated Malcolm Williams as principal of Parktown Boys High in Johannesburg. The Gauteng Department of Education said it was disappointed regarding the decision to reinstate Williams and added that it was studying the decision and seeking legal counsel on the matter. Of course, they dismissed him for his role in events that led to the unfortunate death of grade 8 learner Enoch Mpianzi, you remember, in 2019, in a school outing that wasn't sanctioned by the department. Anyway, they've done investigations, and they've decided that this guy is not to blame, and therefore he can be reinstated as principal of that school. Now, if they've done the investigations and there's a process that has been followed and they've decided that he's not responsible as the principal and he can resume his duties, then unless you have information that the rest of us don't, of course you're allowed to be upset by this, just like we can be upset about, you know, someone being reinstated in government when they've been cleared of charges. You're allowed to be cross. You're allowed to ask questions. But unless you have information the rest of us don't, you've got to accept the decision, ultimately. So I don't know how this is still controversial. Of course, people are angry because, you know, a child died. But we'll have to figure out on our own how we can make this work, how we can make sense of this from here on in. Anyway, the IEC, you know them, the Independent Electoral Commission, they have decided that they have to get ready and get geared up for what it describes as the most complex elections in South Africa's history. Obviously, that is because of coronavirus.
Coronavirus.
Coronavirus. That's right. We haven't said that for a while. The nation's electoral commission said through Sy Mamabolo, who's the CEO, he addressed the official launch of 2021's local government elections. On Wednesday, he said this year's drive will be held under the tagline of "Every Voice Together." Okay, we don't need your ad campaign, dude. You know, the 2021 local government elections will see 4,468 wards contested across the country, which is 67 more than we did than we went and voted for in 2016. Teams are planning for 500 more voting stations, meaning that there will be more than 23,000 places for South Africans to cast their votes. 200 political parties will contest the elections. 200, with 65,000 candidates contesting different wards. Good, good. Let's make sure these elections are free and fair and that we can elect people who really genuinely have interests in making the community better, right? That would be good. That would be terrific. Okay. Dozens of children have been seized by armed groups in Mozambique. There is not a week that goes by that we don't hear a story like this, either from Nigeria. Yesterday it was Burkina Faso. Today it's Mozambique. And we've got, yikes, you know, and we've got the Pan-African Parliament, which we spoke to JJ Cornish about on Tuesday, where people are hitting each other and throwing chairs at each other. This is the continent we live in. It's embarrassing. I am upset that we have to be talking about the Pan-African Parliament, which is not a news story and shouldn't be a news story, and those people shouldn't even be here in Midrand, when their own countries are on fire. These governments on this continent need to get their shit together. Ordinary people are being harassed, kidnapped, killed, chased into refugee camps, trying to flee their own countries because the governments of those countries have not got control of the country. Armed groups plaguing parts of northern Mozambique for the past 3.5 years have abducted dozens of children. I'm sorry, if there is a crime that is bound to make every decent human being upset, it's the abduction of children by armed groups from their parents. You must be kidding me. I mean, this is just unbelievable. Save the Children, which is a British charity, said that during 2020, the abduction of children has become a new and alarmingly regular tactic by armed groups involved in the conflict. The numbers involved are likely higher than estimates based on data collected by US conflict tracker ACLED. It said at least 51 children, most of them girls. Please, can we take this seriously, everybody? This is much, much more serious than, you know, the 10 kids who supposedly or not supposedly born in some hospital in Tembisa. 51 girls have, or 51 kids, most of them girls, been stolen. These Islamist attacks have displaced some 700,000 people since 2017. There are some real problems going on. This is one of them. And finally, I can't wait to get to the end of the news today. It's all very upsetting.
Right.
This one is two. In Portugal, drug dealers took their business online to meet the challenges of the coronavirus pandemic. That's according to an EU report on Wednesday. Drug dealers adapted quickly to restrictions imposed across Europe to beat the virus. We're witnessing a dynamic and adaptive drug market, resilient to COVID-19, said Alexis Guzdil. Yeah, resilient. That's the director of the European Monitoring Center for Drugs and Drug Addiction. The pandemic accelerated the Uberization of the market, said this this person. Ads could be placed online, allowing people to order using encrypted messaging apps for home delivery.
But I can't believe they like only reporting. So this is a thing here, right? Mm-hmm. With WhatsApp.
Yes, of course.
WhatsApp's. You know how on like Marketplace on Facebook or yeah. any of those things, like people yeah. are always advertising shit, and then you get into a WhatsApp group, and then 15 WhatsApps later, boom, it's a drug dealer trying to sell you drugs. Just soliciting. We were doing a project with one of my interns last year, and this was the thing. I mean, she came to me, she was like, "Sis, for me, you won't believe what keeps popping up. I joined all these like Facebook groups for entrepreneurs and small businesses and whatever. And then like there'll be a random person DMing you about drugs."
Wow. It's slightly admirable from my part, I have to say.
I think that's
enterprising to say the
great
least.
Great entrepreneurship.
Yeah, that is, you know, we talk about seizing opportunities. So this is happening, obviously, in Portugal.
Yes.
In Portugal, drugs are legal. That's obviously a big part of the story from Portugal is that you can talk about it there. If you talk about it anywhere else, it's essentially a criminal matter, which is why even in this country, although you know, weed has been legalized. There are other drugs that are still not legal and probably won't be for a very long time. So talking about them, dealing in them, and any kind of evidence that will lead to you being involved in a story like that is something that people don't talk about publicly. But as Pumi says, it's happening. It's happening right under our eyes. And it's now, you know, it's got to a point where, frankly, if the government can't keep the lights on, what are they worrying about drugs for? Let people have as many drugs as they want, you know. Stop making stupid rules that you can't enforce, because how are you going to enforce it? You're going to send Lindiwe Zulu into a WhatsApp group where they're selling drugs, and then she's going to go, boom, I got you. And then what?
And then she has load shedding, so she can't pursue that.
Yeah, exactly. Becky Taylor. Can you imagine? Well, John Bad Dog Hell No says, "Well, power's out in Benoni, so I'll have to listen this morning." I know what the
what
names the names people have. Power's out this morning. I'll have to listen on the app. Not enough data to watch. Well, don't worry. There's nothing wrong with that. It is a podcast first and foremost. We've only added the visual part to it recently. Justice Lesilo says, "Pumi Skonati is working against the same thing he was fighting for. How ironic! His articles are still online and." Not funny. Funny, not funny. That's from Justice. Nice one. Zach Lesupi says, "There's always smoke where that Malcolm Williams is. Ask anyone with kids going to the International School of South Africa where he was principal for a very short period in Mafikeng." Oh, wow. Okay.
Oh.
Well, then.
Maybe that's worth taking a look at. Sure.
Oh.
Casting aspersions. Some
scandal.
Corona's Boring says, "At least the leader of Boko Haram went out with a bang." Apparently, yeah, they took him
Yay.
Out.
let's go to Sean. I don't want to do that. Yeah.
Listen, okay, let's go to Sean, and I'm going to go try and get hold of Celci to see if I can sort out my thing. I'll join back just now, guys.
All right, Pumelele. We'll see you just now.
Let's.
There's Pumi Mashiho. She'll be back with us in a moment or two. First, let us return to Cape Town, where Sean Sanders is resplendent in his offices at Revix, and he's going to tell us this morning about what the hell is going on in the crypto market. I see it's back up to 36,800. It's really bouncing around a lot in the 30,000s of dollars. Sean, what's going on? Who is manipulating this? Are we finding a new point of stability? Was that $60,000 that we hit a couple of weeks ago, was that just a fluke? Or do you think it's going to go back? Help us, because people are terrified. And there are people who are getting very panicky. We don't want that to happen, but You know, like any other investment, you want people to be sensible about this. But can you give us some advice as to how to understand what's happening?
Yeah, morning, Gareth.
Hey, man.
So I don't think crypto is going to become stable anytime soon, right? I mean, this is a very emotional asset class. People tend to sort of, you know, move with their feelings, right? They'll buy, they'll sell based on the way that they feel. And it's exactly what we spoke about last week, right? I mean, we saw, you know, a few big ups and downs over this last week. Yesterday, Bitcoin was up about 13%. You know, this prior week, it's still down about 4%. And you see, when the market starts dropping, people get scared and they immediately sell. And it's just, and as I spoke about this on your podcast last week, when that happens, you see a whole bunch of retail investors, so everyday people like you and I, sell out to the market's going down. And then when it bounces back up, like what it's doing now, they jump back in. So you've got like the worst of both worlds. So that's definitely something, you know, you need to be aware of. Keeping your emotions in check is really important. But there's been a lot that's happened in the last week. Some good and not so, and then some that's not so good. So the first bit of big news was the fact that Donald Trump 2 days ago came out and called Bitcoin a scam against the dollar. And I mean, that's a bit of a sensationalist headline, because he actually came out to say, I don't like it because there's another cryptocurrency competing against the dollar. And he doesn't like that. So that was news. I don't really know if that had any big impact on the crypto price, but that was some really interesting news that came out. Then you had that Colonial Pipeline hack that took place, or hack, you know, data breach that took place at the end of last week. And you had the FBI and federal authorities in the US able to actually track down these hackers. And I think the hacker group was called DarkSide. They're supposedly Russian hackers. But they were actually able to recover, if I'm not mistaken, about 75%, which is about $5 million of the ransom that was paid in Bitcoin. And this is something that I think a lot of people don't quite understand. They think Bitcoin is anonymous and it's online and it's just, you know, once you've made a payment, it's gone forever. But no, you can actually track, because it uses a blockchain, you can actually track every single transaction that's ever occurred. Yep. So this could actually be, in a very strange sense, a way that law enforcement actually then maybe starts turning its viewpoint on crypto and becoming a lot more accepting of it. So yeah, I guess that's actually a positive development, in my opinion. There's a lot of debate in the crypto community about that. And then probably the biggest news by far of this last week is that El Salvador has become the first country in the world to officially classify Bitcoin as legal tender. Now, I cannot understate just how important this is. Why? Because that means shops actually have to accept Bitcoin along the local currency that they have and the US dollar. That is a huge development. I mean, Gareth, 2 years ago, I was on your show and I was saying that there will be a sovereign nation, some country that's paying with hyperinflation or something like that, that's going to accept a cryptocurrency as one of their currencies. And now this has happened. So this is really, really big news. So there's been a lot of developments in the crypto space, and this has driven the market quite a bit higher now. I mean, the market's up about 15% since this time yesterday.
Well, Monica says exactly that. She says, what do you think about it? Now, El Salvador is not the biggest or most exciting place in the world, but it is a start. And if a country like that does something which I think would have been considered revolutionary just a couple of weeks ago, that is the beginning of something very exciting. You know, there's so much conversation going on around this G7 meeting, which is about to take place, because what Joe Biden's trying to do there is he's trying to establish a base level tax, because what happens is, if he pushes up corporate taxes in America, all they're going to do is send their businesses overseas and register in other locations where they pay less tax. So what he's actually trying to do is bully the rest of the world into putting the baseline tax at 15%, which of course will just chase American businesses out. And the cleverest countries are going to be countries like El Salvador that say, well, come to us. We won't charge you any corporate tax. They will benefit. All they have to do is sit back and wait for the money to roll in, which is precisely what's going to happen for those countries that, like El Salvador, are smart enough to hop on the cryptocurrency bandwagon now and to start giving it some cred. They will probably be able to reap the benefits of being early adopters in this place, in this space. And I think that that's probably one of the reasons we should be excited as well. All of this global control by governments is going to result in squeezing and squeezing and squeezing until something pops out.
I couldn't agree more. I mean, this is a big development, again, with a small nation. Start looking at Zimbabwe, look at Argentina, potentially look at South Africa, right? At some point in time, when your currency is depreciated that much and you've had to adopt the dollar, like, it's not that big of a deal to then go and accept a digital currency, right? At the end of the day, any country that's got more remittances coming in than going out, by that nature. Sort of, you want to enable your people to be able to accept money internationally, and that's where Bitcoin comes in. But I agree. I think the regulatory arbitrage, which is what you're talking about there, with, you know, taxes and, you know, regulations in different jurisdictions right. being different, I think that's going to become a much bigger factor over the next few years. I mean, sure, you know, Biden can go around and say, listen, we need to have a minimum global tax of 15%. But what do you do about, let's say, the UAE, right, where you've got no corporate taxes?
Correct.
Or you look at, you know, some other Gulf nations.
Well, like, also,
how on earth are they going to just introduce taxes, right?
They don't have to comply with some big otherwise, what is sovereignty? I mean, like, you may as well just make yourself a vassal state of the United States. And the stupid thing about this is that even within the United States, you can't apply a single tax because Florida doesn't necessarily want to do what Massachusetts wants to do. So it's a completely stupid.
This is why you've seen this huge move to Houston, right? Or to Texas. Right?
This is an antiquated idea. This is like, oh, well, government is so powerful that we can just make everybody bend to our will. Unfortunately, money doesn't flow uphill. And people in politics have never understood this because they've never actually made money. Very few people in politics have ever had a business. They've never had to understand this stuff. Let me tell you one other thing, that if anybody doubts that the Rand is going to end up being a lot less valuable over time than Bitcoin, if not already, then let me just sketch the scenario of Eskom for you, because the same people in charge of the Rand, essentially, and the ups and downs of what happens in our own market through regulation and influence and the control of infrastructure and everything else, those are the same people in charge of Eskom. So if you really think that the Rand is going to benefit from their stewardship, I have bad news for you. In the long run, it is better to have some decentralized situation where people all over the world know exactly what they're dealing with, and there is a blockchain, and there is accountability, and it can be traced, and it can't be lied about. That, to me, sounds like a much better system.
Yeah, look, I think this is the biggest opportunity for South Africans in particular. You've got the Rand, I don't know what it is today, but it's super strong against the dollar, super strong against you know, a lot of other international currencies, because we're entering this commodity super cycle.
Yeah.
Like, this is the time, in my opinion, again, just solely my opinion, not financial advice, to get your money out of South Africa, or to get your money out of Rands. Move it into some harder currency. But you know, what is a currency move at the end of the day? If you're holding, you know, money, essentially, and you've got a whole bunch more money being printed. In fact, if I'm not mistaken, you've had $500 trillion printed this year alone.
Yeah,
so, I mean, the inflation on money itself is insane. So looking at decentralized currencies like Bitcoin, I mean, I think it's a huge opportunity. And again, the market's down a good 40% odd from its all-time high. Is this a time to get in? Yeah, of course. I think it's a no-brainer at this point.
Well, it's 13 Rand 73 to the dollar. So that's a pretty good number to start doing some trades on. Anyway, thank you very much, Sean. And lots of comments and compliments for you, except from Andre, who's obviously terribly jealous. He says you look washed out, but Monica says you're looking perfect at always. Get some glasses, Andre. So again, not a week goes by that we don't talk about the ups and downs of crypto, because there's always exciting stuff happening. But again, there's no week that is too superficial or not superficial enough for us to also refer to the way Sean looks. Thanks, everybody. Very good. All right, Sean, good to see you, bro. Cool, man.
Thanks, Gareth. Yeah, have a good one. Bye.
Sean Saunders, go to Revix.com and sign up today. It's free, and you can make it really easy for yourself. They just have to get your details in terms of making sure that it's all FECID and it's all regular, because this is not something, as we discussed last week with Sean, that you can escape from a tax point of view. Everything that you do, government wants a piece of, because they've got to pay for all their fuck-ups, right? So there it is. There's a little look at what's going on in the world of cryptocurrency. In case you do want to know, the Bitcoin price at the moment, $36,755 as of 6:55 this morning, and Ethereum at $2,549. There we go. There's your update. That's what you need to know this morning. We've got lots of exciting things to talk about in the Burning Platform. That's coming up next. We've got Ted Blum, who's going to be joining us. Ted is probably one of the strongest and most credible voices when it comes to discussing the vagaries of Eskom. So this morning, we're really not shying away from the big stories, whether it's cryptocurrencies, whether it's international taxes, or whether it's Eskom, which really most South Africans, if you just take a look at social media yesterday, are upset about. Justifiably so, right?
Do you have the panic every so often throughout your day where you want to make sure, oh, what battery percentage is my laptop on?
Oh, man.
What about my phone?
Yeah, yeah.
Then I go around and make sure that everything is plugged in and charged sufficiently. It's silly.
Well, you know what's so funny is that despite having put in the inverter last week and we tested it out, not because we wanted to, but we tested it out last Friday, right? And I was looking at it yesterday thinking, are you going to make it through load shedding? Because load shedding went on for so long yesterday that I thought, oh my God, I can't afford to have any more power interruptions, because otherwise there isn't even going to be enough power in these batteries. So that's how people are thinking now. It's got beyond ridiculous. And if you're angry, you're allowed to be angry. But I will remind you, it probably doesn't do you any good. It just puts you in a bad mood.
I saw a great meme, which is very apt in these times, that says something along the lines of, the secret to a successful relationship is to be in love with someone who's in a different load shedding area than you are. Yep.
Oh, that is so true.
To call on someone and say, hey, honey, are you home?
I miss you so much. Just checking, have you got power? Because I don't have power. No, very good. All right, and don't forget that we've got lots of other good stuff coming up, including the Burning Platform, which is not just a chance for us to check in on ESCOM, but for us to talk a little bit about some of the big stories going on in politics, in the economy, and in international news. So it's a one-stop shop for you to keep up to date, where we don't pull any punches and we don't hold back on our points of view. That's with Pumi and this morning Ted Blum. And we'll get into all the other stories too. So stick around for that and a whole lot more. CliffCentral.com. It's just before 7.
CliffCentral.com.